Thanks for downloading the latest in our series of episodes of the C-Suite podcast that we're recording in partnership with the European PR agency Taito and their own Without Borders podcast, where we are interviewing leaders of unicorn companies to find out about the key issues, pain points and challenges that startups face and how they can address them with a strategic approach to marketing and communications. My name is Russell Goldsmith and my co-host for this series of interviews is Taito's founder, Brendan Craigie. And today we are thrilled to be joined online from New York by Felix van der Mala, co-founder and CEO of Calibra, a big data management startup that raised $112.5 million in April 2020 and achieved a $2.3 billion valuation. Welcome to the show, Felix. We always like to start by getting our guests to give us a quick introduction to their business. So over to you.
Perfect. Thank you, Russell and Brendan. Great to be here. So like you said, Calibra, we are a data intelligence software company. So we're a software company and we help typically large organizations ultimately better find, understand, and trust their data. We do that kind of through data intelligence, which really is about connecting data to the right people, to the right insights, and to the right reports. And in that sense, help companies with data governance. So how to make sure we can trust and have confidence in our data and in our reports. We help them around data cataloging. How do we help analysts find the right data faster? Think of it like Amazon for data. And of course, we help them around data privacy as well, around the GDPR regulation, CCPA regulation. We believe as data becomes more and more important and foundational for any large organization, treating data in the right way and really being compliant to these privacy regulations, which are only going to increase, is really important. And so that's what we do for large companies across every single industry, from financial services to healthcare, retail, technology, and so on.
Thanks, Felix. And when you announced your latest round of funding last year, we noticed that you spoke about how large companies were living in or living with data chaos. And I guess we're coming up to a year on from then. How has the situation evolved since then? And is that still the case? And has the pandemic changed things at all?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And this is something that has gone on for a number of years now. If you think about, we started a company 12 years ago at the very beginning, but over the last 10 years, the importance of data has only increased. The volume of data has only increased. We saw the whole shift towards the cloud and big data. So more volume, more complexity. But on the other hand, the number of people that consume data, produce data, use data to do their work day to day has only increased. And that combination of all these factors really has led to that data chaos, right? And organizations have started to understand that they really need to build that foundation to be able to, so to speak, tame the chaos and really get to valuable outcomes. And I think at the pandemic, we've actually been able to see that play out, not just within organizations, but almost in society. If you think about COVID-19, we've all, I'm sure, looked weekly, if not daily, to the dashboards to see how things are moving. Are they good? Are they bad? How are things changing? And we've seen a lot of discussions as well and questions around, are these numbers correctly? Can we compare how Belgium is doing versus how the US is doing versus how the UK is doing? Can we actually compare those numbers? How are these measured? Are they correct? Can we trust them? So this whole result about the data chaos and not really having confidence and trust often in the numbers so we can actually take a decision based on them. I think we've seen this play out just in the mainstream media and in society at large. And so it's been interesting to see that reflected what has been going on in organizations for a long time, not now publicly. The other thing that we've seen is that given that it's all about helping people ultimately work together, and given that we've all been forced to work from home, this need for collaboration, I think, has only increased the need for a tool, a platform, a system to actually make that easier. Because it used to be easy to just meet with people in the hallway, have a meeting to agree and have these discussions. Now that we're all working from home, this has only increased in importance.
And have you found, we've spoken to different unicorn leaders and some have found that the last year has been challenging in terms of doing business, but a lot of them have actually found it's led to kind of increased demand for their technology. How has the environment worked for you this past 12 months or so, you know, since the pandemic?
Yeah, I'd say both. I think at the beginning of the pandemic, let's say March, April, May, there was a lot of uncertainty. And so everyone, including ourselves, we've almost paused a little bit to say, okay, how is this going to play out? There were, at the time, we had no idea how bad it was going to get or how good or okay it was going to be. I think what we've seen in the second half of the year that's actually been not as bad as we thought it was going to be. And so in the beginning, we definitely saw a pause where people just waiting to see, okay, what's going to happen? Let's make sure we are conservative enough. But then through the second half of the year, we've seen really business kick up. And again, the thing that has really happened through this pandemic is that the shift towards digital transformation, I'm sure you've heard it before, has only been accelerated, right? All of the e-commerce has shifted totally to the web, to digital. So everything has kind of shifted to digital. So, and we really believe that data is at the foundation of this shift towards digital. Ultimately, if you think about these digital companies, they're inherently all data companies. And so in that sense, the need to have that foundation around data, really being able to get to outcomes with data faster, be able to trust data, make decisions around data, has only increased in importance. And we've seen that translate in our business as well, where first half of the year, I'd say little uncertainty and let's wait and see. Second half of the year, we've really seen that reaccelerate. And that's what we expect for 21 as well.
That's really exciting. I was doing a little bit of homework and I was kind of like thinking back to the term big data. It's kind of been around for a while. Apparently someone coined the term in 2005. You know, as we're still at the beginning of 2021, what's the kind of next frontier in this whole area of big data? Because it feels like we've been talking about it for a long time. What do you think the real need is in 2021?
Yeah, it's indeed like over the last 15 years, we've seen this enormous shift in data. Up till now, I think the focus, to your point, has been a lot about big data. It's a lot about the volumes of data, complexity of data. The more data is better. And that has been the focus. And we've seen a lot of innovation technically as well around, okay, how do we store that data? How do we capture that data? How do we process that data at these kind of new volumes, that scale that we haven't seen before? The move to cloud, we've seen a lot of advancements there. I think what people are now realizing that just having more data is not necessarily the answer. And the analogy that I use is like having a haystack, and the haystack represents the amount of data you have. So we've grown that haystack enormously. The needle, that piece of data, that data set that you actually need to make real impact, make a decision, get some insights, is just as small, right? And so in a way, we've made it harder and more difficult to find that needle in that haystack. And so I think that's been an interesting evolution. And so what we're starting to see now is that just having better technology to process more data than ever before is important, but it's not enough, right? And so building that foundation around data where it's easy for people to find the right data, it's easy for people to trust that data that is correct, it's easy for people to work together around data, it's easy for people to treat data correctly from a privacy and security perspective, is becoming more and more important. And you've seen the trend where people are building these data lakes, which again, it was all about the volume of data, and they quickly became data swamps, right? You couldn't find anything anymore. And so that realization is really important. And even kind of put it more of a philosophical level, we used to talk about data being the new oil, right? And I really don't like that phrase. I think it's limiting. I think it's about looking at data as a resource. And we at Equilibria believe that data is much more than that. We don't think it's necessarily a resource. It's almost a human emotion that's about sharing information. It's not something new. It's something that humanity has done forever. And so we really think about data much more as about creating a shared language that can bring people closer together, can actually help people understand each other much better. And so the thing we've seen as well around data over the last couple of years is that in the news, there's been a lot of negative connotations around data. If you look at big tech, Facebook, Amazon, Google, how they treat data, how they kind of manipulate data, where it's a negative thing. I think what we want to do with Equilibria is really make data more human. So everybody truly understands what data can do for them, help people become data literate. And that's why we talk about this concept of a data citizen, right? Where you have a right as a citizen, but you also have responsibilities. So we believe everyone should have the right to have easy access to trustworthy data, because I think in this shift of digital transformation, it's going to be important for everyone to have that to do their job. And that power of democratizing that access, I think, is really important. But on the other hand, that balance as a citizen, you also have responsibilities. And so having the right responsibilities around treating that data right from a privacy and security perspective is just as important. And so that's really how we believe that over the last 15 years, the shift towards big data, it's all about volume and technology, towards data now being something much more human. It's all about collaboration. It's all about trust. It's all about confidence as an important shift that we're seeing.
I think that's a really refreshing perspective, and yeah, you know, helps to clarify where we're at. So thank you.
Definitely, yeah. I just want to go back to what I was saying on the introduction, Felix, and that recent investment. Well, it's coming up for a year, I guess, now, which was quite a large investment in the business. Did that take you over into the unicorn status and up into the $2 billion valuation? That you weren't at a unicorn stage before that, or is that what took you to?
We were the year before, so I think 2019, if I keep track correctly, we became a unicorn and we raised also $100 million. And then last year, 2020, we raised another $112 million, and that pushed our valuation from $1 billion to about $2.3 billion or so.
I mean, one of the things we're keen to, I guess, understand on this is that journey to becoming a unicorn, but also when you reach that milestone, did it change the perception of the company?
It's a good question, and I often talk about this journey from starting a company from the very beginning where there's nothing really. And I do think the analogy that I use, I like to think of it almost like a climb. And you're climbing, of course, you have big ambitions and a big vision. So it's not like you're climbing a little hill. You want to climb Mount Everest, so to speak. And so you can't just go walk straight up. It comes in stages and phases, just like in Mount Everest, that there's like base camp one and base camp two, and you have to acclimate a little bit. And I think a kind of a startup towards that billion-dollar valuation is similar. I never use the valuation as a target. It's really how you build the business. And the result of that is what valuation you get. And we have to be honest as well, depending on where the markets are, the valuation really differs. Like if you would go back 10 years, a company at a similar stage would get a very different valuation than a company would get today. If you look at the public market multiples that we're seeing today. So, but I really see that as a journey with important kind of milestones. And then becoming that billion-dollar company, which we did about 2.5 years ago, I think it was never the target for us. It was never a milestone. Again, we don't think of valuation as a milestone. It's just a moment in time and a result of something that you've built. The good thing is, as a high-growth company, as a startup, it is a little bit like a flywheel and like a snowball. And the faster this flywheel goes, it's almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And of course, the recognition you get as a unicorn allows you to hire more people, hire better talent, which is probably the most important thing that you have to do as a CEO and founder. And so it gets you more credibility in the market. Like I said, we work with the largest companies in the world. They need to know that we're gonna be here in business for the next 5 years, the next 10 years, the long time investments that they make. So all of those things become a little easier. And so in that sense, it's kind of a great way to make the flywheel go a little faster.
Felix, we said you're joining us from New York, but obviously you didn't start the business in the States. You started it in Belgium. What was it like when you moved yourself over to the States and to carry on driving and building the business?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started in 2008 in Brussels and Belgium. But from the very beginning, we realized that we couldn't build a successful company in Belgium, given the customers we focused to, there just weren't enough. So we were very internationally focused from the very beginning. And so that's kind of how it built. We actually found a lot of our product market fit and initial customers in the US, and we did that just through traveling. So we traveled there for 2 weeks and then came back and then over the phone late nights in Belgium. But that wasn't really sustainable because we ultimately believe that presence creates opportunity. And so actually one of our founders, Stan, was the first one to move, I think in 2013 or 2014, again, kind of to be closer to our customers. And then in 2015, as we started to scale the business, I was going back and forth between Brussels and New York every other week. And so I was jet lagged like literally the entire time. So also realized that wasn't sustainable anymore as well. And so decided then to make the move full time to New York. And really New York then became our headquarter for the company as well. And you see that often European companies, once they start to scale, there's more more talent available as well in the US. And we saw most of our customers actually and in the US, like I said, our initial product market fit was with financial services. And of course, we could do London out of Brussels. New York is the other big hub. And so that's really why we ended up in New York and maybe not San Francisco or Boston. We followed our customers, not our investors. And so really that's why we ultimately ended up in New York. And it's been an interesting move in 2015. It's interesting because it does require quite a bit of adjusting to scale in the US. And there's a lot of lessons learned from that, but it was a really important decision that we make, and I'm sure we wouldn't be where we are today if we wouldn't have made that decision to fundamentally move.
And how have you coped personally? I mean, did you travel backwards and forwards quite a bit before the pandemic, and obviously not being able to for the last 12 months? How's that been?
Yeah, it was a very very busy year. So in 2015, we moved. I think I got married in 2016. And by now, we have two little daughters. And so a son of family as well. And so the traveling was still quite heavy. So, of course, I go back regularly to Belgium to meet the people there in our office, but also to London, to Paris, to Poland, around. And so it's been quite good in that sense. But we really call New York home, and we love it here. We really enjoy being here for the last 5 years, and so it's been really good.
That's really interesting. Thanks, Felix. And so, thinking about the past year when we've all had to kind of operate with certain constraints, they say that necessity is the mother of invention. Have there been kind of things that you've seen, you know, that have kind of emerged in this past pandemic period, which have excited you?
Yes, it's really going back to that kind of acceleration of that shift towards digital transformation. Everybody had to work from home. And so we've really seen this shift happening in the next 3 years, was happening in 3 months, so to speak. So this massive acceleration, which was, I think, really exciting to see that happening. And again, for us, and specifically the acceptance that data is really at the foundation of this. I think there's been a saying for some time where we say that software is eating the world. I would argue that data is eating the world, very much so. And so I think the importance of data also has been clearly shown, like almost on a societal level. I think on the one hand, you had the kind of the presidential election in the US, where it's so much about data and the importance of data, and almost the almost sometimes the mistrust of data. Again, the power of data is interesting. And also around COVID, I think, it's been interesting to see how quickly we got to these vaccines. And again, data has been such an important kind of foundational source there. We've done kind of what we could do as well from Kaluba's perspective. So we published our COVID-19 data catalog. And so really taking into account and capturing all these different data sets, wherever they come from, making sure people can easily find them, can trust them with the definitions, like how do we actually measure this particular field? Again, to make it easier for people to do the right analysis based on that data. And we've made that publicly available, and we've got great kind of adoption on that as well, which was exciting to see what we could do in that respect. And from our customers as well, we work with a lot of the largest pharma companies as well. And again, in that kind of research process, using data in the right way, having people access data faster with more confidence is really impactful. And so from that perspective, it's been really great to work with our customers in that sense as well.
Just switching topic for a second, a key part of what we talk about in these discussions with our unicorn leaders is on communications and culture within the business. And so, you know, it'd be great to understand what your approach has been to raising awareness and differentiating yourself in, I guess, what must be a pretty crowded area.
Yes. So it's not something that kind of came natural to me as I started. This is my first job out of school. I have a computer science degree. So it's something that I had to learn over time, and also something that I had to learn why it's so important as well, like communication and really standing out. And I go back to where we started, where we really were able to create data governance as a category, as a software category from the very beginning. Like we actually created that category, and we really position it in the market because we believed that it was a really important thing to do. Now, as we grew, we also had to expand that category. And again, communication in the market is really important because you have to educate the market. You have to explain your point of view, your perspective. So we've done it over the last couple of years, expanding from data governance into data intelligence as a broader category, which was a really important concept. But then also internally, as your company grows from 10 people to 1,000 people, the focus on internal communication, especially during COVID, where you don't have the opportunity to meet people in person all the time, only becomes much more important. When we've done surveys, I've never had people say we want less communication. People always want more. But so doing that in the right way has been really important. And it's been part of my growth as a leader as well to understand how do you best do that. I believe surrounding yourself with the right people, with the right team, that you can lean on, I think is really important. Almost pushing yourself out of your comfort zone as well. Again, it's not something that necessarily came natural to me when I started, but as you do this, you understand how important it is, and it's something that you have to really lean into. But the other thing that I've learned is that, like, authenticity, I think, is the most important thing, because people have to believe you. You are who you are personally. The company is who the company is. And I think that's something that people follow. So being really authentic in your story, in your beliefs, And then it goes back to our mission, our vision, our values as a company, which has stayed really consistent over the last 10, 12 years, I think has been really something kind of a great foundation to build upon. And so these are some of the things that I've learned and picked up over the last 10 years as I kind of evolved in my role and how we think about the communication.
So you mentioned internal communications there then. How have you been dealing with that over the last year? I mean, I don't know if previously you'd spoken individually or to teams or to the company as a whole, but you're now, as you said, you're growing rapidly. I'm guessing you're spread over numerous locations, but everyone's been working at home or mostly, you know, for the last year. So how have you overcome those challenges? What kind of things have you been doing?
Yeah, there's a number of things. And in general, I've always been very approachable. I've always enjoyed very much connecting directly with people. Now, again, as the company grows, it's harder to do that. So you need to find leverage. You need to find a way to connect with people in a more effective way. I've always really enjoyed kind of visiting our different offices. To your point, we have different offices, a big office in New York, in Belgium, in Poland, in France, in London, really across the world. And a big part of my where I spend my time is visiting our different offices. And it was always great to actually connect with the people. You get a sense of the culture. You get a sense of how people are doing. People really appreciate it as well. And so, of course, in the COVID world, that wasn't possible anymore. So we had to think of alternative and how do you connect in a world where everybody's at home, but also where there's so much uncertainty and so much change, where actually connecting and communicating has never been more important. And so we did a number of things. We did a lot of listening sessions with the management team, where we brought people together, 5, 6, 7, 8 people, and just listened. What's going on? What do you care about? What are you concerned about? So to really understand what's going on within our teams, which was really important and very much appreciated by the company. We have regular all-hands meetings, and pre-COVID, we did that once a month. We said, okay, it's important that we do it much more consistently. And so we shifted to do that every other week, again, to have much more regular communications with the team. I started doing something. I started doing a bi-weekly vlog, like a video blog, just internally, where I share about what's top of mind for me, what am I thinking of, what the exec team is thinking of, be able to recognize people, recognize great things that we're doing. Again, to not have another opportunity for people to connect in that way, not just over also over video, which is important. And then I did a coffee with Felix. Again, just an opportunity for people to just connect directly about a random topic. People can sign up. It's not an obligation at all. But just to get people an opportunity to connect directly with me as well. Things that I used to do when I was visiting our different offices, I couldn't do anymore now. And so these are a couple of the things that we did last year to make sure people were able to connect and felt that sense of connectivity with everything that we're doing.
That's brilliant. And do you think, I mean, just going back to that culture element that I mentioned, I mean, how have you, or how did you build and introduce the culture to the company? And have you managed to continue that, doing all those different things that you just mentioned over the last year?
I think so. I mean, you have to ask the people, right?
Yeah. Well, because I was going to say, I mean, I don't know how many people have you know, you've recruited over the last 12 months, say, that haven't even experienced being in an office with people, you know, because that's a key part of understanding the culture is working side by side and, you know, coming into the office every day. And of course, a lot, I'm guessing you've onboarded people that haven't even experienced that at all.
Yes. And I don't know the exact percentage top of mind, but there's actually quite a big percentage that of people that have joined recently that have never been in the office and have never met anyone in person. Even in my management team, we have a few people that I've never actually seen in person. I don't know really how tall they are, right? And it's kind of strange to think about. But to your point, it just makes it so much more important. And going back to culture, it's in the beginning, it comes natural, and it's really part of that kind of initial team, the founders initial team. But as you grow, you have to be much more thoughtful about it. So we made our cultural values explicit, and we reinforce them all the time. A big part, of course, is an interview process to make sure that there's a great culture fit as well. And like, for example, one of our values is open, direct, and kind. So we're very transparent, we're very open and very kind of kind and respectful in our communications as well. And that really flows through to kind of what you do day in, day out. And that, I think that's an example of some of the things we've introduced this year to make sure people feel that. But it's something that you always have to keep working on. Like, you can't take it for granted. Like, people come and go. You always have to work on it. You can always strive to do better as well. You're never going to be perfect as a company, but also personally. And so it's always like a goal that you're working towards. But keeping that top of mind in everything that we do has been really important.
I think you're right about needing to always just keep those things fresh and keep trying new things. thinking more on the external front, I mean, how do you see your role as the external spokesperson for the company, and what have you learned along the way so far?
Yes, it's like I said, it's not something that necessarily came natural to me from the very beginning, but over time I've realized how important it is. I think it's important externally to put a face to the company, explain why we are here, why what we do is important to customers, to the broader market, to investors. I think that's a really important aspect. But actually, even internally, and I kind of underestimated that external communications, a big part of that is actually helping with internal communication as well. It's important for people like our employees to see how we're being captured in the media or external message is actually part of internal communication as well. So I've learned how important it is. And so it's a much bigger part of my role versus a couple of years ago. And I expect that only to increase. And it's interesting with last year, of course, during COVID, there was so much kind of going on internally, a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty. I felt the need to make sure we focus on our employees, and I spend a lot of time internally as well. And again, now that that's shifting, where there's light at the end of the tunnel, right? And we see the business shifting, it's going to shift again to be much more kind of externally focused. Because that's of course very very important. But again, a part of the reason also is that we see ourselves as a category defining company. Like I said, we did that 10 years ago and we defined the data governance category as the first ones. It didn't really exist. We felt like this is going to become really important. Initially, interestingly, tied to the financial crisis in 2008, which initially gave rise to the need for data governance within all the large banks. And so we created that category, and you can only do that by kind of externally explaining that to the market. And now we've, over the last 2 years, expand that to data intelligence. And so again, it's on us to explain what do we mean with data intelligence? Why is that important? Why is it impactful? And again, it's all about external communication. So it's a really big part of the job.
I think you're right. It's kind of, you're like the cheerleader for the company, aren't you? And I think that if they don't see you out there, then they're kind of like, why not? You know, like it's kind of almost you're getting recognition for the business, aren't you? And the team externally. It sounds like you formulated a bit of a plan to address that, you know, as in you recognized it was an area that was kind of important to the business, and then you formulated a bit of a plan as far as that kind of external role.
Absolutely. And I can't stress how important it is to surround yourself with kind of a great team, again, in everything that you do. I'm a big believer in what I call growth mindset, understanding what you're good at, what you're not good at, and always wanting to learn more and get better and kind of push yourself out of your comfort zone. And that's how you get better. Practice makes perfect, and there's still a lot of practice to be done. But surrounding yourself with a great team that can help you in that, can create leverage for you, I think is absolutely critical. And that's something that I recommend all kind of founders, CEOs, as their company grows, it's your most important job. Surround yourself with people that really are experts and that can help you create leverage. And I think it's super important. So having a plan in that sense and being really thoughtful and proactive around it is really important.
What would you say has been the biggest communications challenge you've faced since you started the business?
We haven't ever been in crisis mode. So I think there's not an event like that where it was a really difficult communication challenge in that sense. I think from the very beginning, the hardest part that in a way we're still facing a little bit is explaining what we do in layman's terms that people get and why it is important. In the beginning, it was all about people didn't realize how important data was. So we were talking about data and data governance. I was like, why is this important? Like, why is it even relevant? And so in that sense, that was our biggest challenge. I think over the last 10 years, we've clearly seen how important data is. So people understand that now. But then explaining what exactly we do is still a challenge because it's quite abstract, right? And it's something that large companies deal with every day. But as an individual, it's easy for me to understand what Instagram does. It's hard for me to understand what Calibra does and why it is important and how it exactly works. And explaining something that's abstract and complex and kind of easy to understand terms continues to be a challenge. I think we got better at it over time, but it's still something that's top of mind. And I think important to be able to really explain in a very simple and easy to understand way.
So I think we're getting close to the end of our questions and things, but thinking about the future, what does the future hold for Calibra? And, you know, do you have any plans that you could maybe share of how you see things shaping up for, in 2021?
Yes, I mean, we're really excited about 21. We see a lot of traction in the market again around data. This acceleration of digital transformation is fueling the need for more more data, but also a better data foundation, right? And again, both from a trust and compliance from a governance perspective, as well as how do we help analysts find the right data faster so we can actually create better insights faster, but also from a privacy perspective. And so I think it's a really exciting time for us because we really see that becoming mainstream. Every organization is hiring, for example, a chief data officer, and that's been a trend that's been ongoing, but only accelerating. And it's almost a proxy. It shows the importance of data at the highest level of organizations. Boards of directors are really understanding the strategic importance of data in the whole digital transformation. So that continues to be a lot of market pool and market awareness that's increasing, and that's really exciting for us. And it's going to continue to fuel a lot of our growth. The other interesting thing is that we see a lot of aspects around data coming together. I think the challenge is that as data has become so mainstream and understandable how important it is, there's been so many data companies out there. 10 years ago, we were one of the few. Now there's hundreds, if not thousands, of data companies. And it's harder to your earlier point, rise above the noise, so to speak. And so we did some work around really being able to have that compelling vision, compelling mission. And I think we really are quite unique in our beliefs. And I talked a little bit about our beliefs around kind of our obligation to humanize data, where it's not a bad thing, it's a positive thing. Our belief that we need to make everyone data literate so we can democratize data. And also our belief that ultimately data can bring people close together as kind of that shared language. I think that's quite a unique and really compelling vision and mission that we have. And we want to continue to push that forward. And so 21, we're really excited about the growth that we continue to see. It's clearly as enormous market opportunity. I think we're really strongly positioned, given our history, but also the planning that we have from a product perspective, how uniquely we bring everything together for governance, catalog, privacy, quality. We recently acquired a data quality company, which is really exciting, and it's a great extension of our platform. And so long-term, we believe we can build a long-term, successful, large, independent company. And that's kind of that's the journey we're on. I talked a little about that climb that I've talked about. Again, the first phase of that climb was to get us from nothing to over 100 million in revenue. And we've done that really successfully. And so we've turned that corner, and now we're on the second journey and the second leg of the climb, so to speak, to go from 100 million to that next phase. And it's really exciting. And so very much looking forward to what the next years are gonna bring.
Is that the first time you've done an acquisition, made an acquisition, or have you?
It's our second acquisition. Last year, or the year before, we acquired a small company around data lineage, and that's all about how do we help and understand how data actually flows to your organization. If you look at data in the reports, how do we know where that data actually came from? And that's important again to kind of trust those numbers. And so that's an acquisition we did a year and a half ago, and now recently last month we did an acquisition around data quality, which is again a great expansion of our platform.
I was just going to ask, because that's another interesting, it goes back to that question about culture, isn't it? Because you're now bringing in a new team from a different business. It's another challenge.
Absolutely. And the first acquisition, they're relatively small, but the first acquisition has been really successful. Again, it's a team that we knew for a while. And so we knew they were going to be really good culture fit. And that's proven to be the case. So that's great. And now with the team around data quality that we acquired, again, we were, I think at that stage, the most important thing you're acquiring, so to speak, is really the team. It's their knowledge, their expertise, but also the culture fit and how well they're going to fit in the organization. And so we felt really, really good about that since from the very beginning. And so we're really exciting to have that team join us on our mission. And I mean, there's been a lot of excitement internally as well as externally. So we're very excited about the prospects of that acquisition.
Great. Felix, we've got one final question for you. It's something we've asked all our unicorn leaders that we've interviewed so far. And that is, if you were to go back in time and speak to your old self, what guidance would you give yourself about communications? And also, what steps would you encourage yourself to take for you and the business to excel in communications?
It's a good question. I think the realization that communications is important earlier, starting earlier, surrounding yourself with people that can help you with that earlier, it's so important, especially like as if you're creating and defining a new category, communication is so important. And maybe it's a bit of kind of either my personality, where we come from in Belgium, like I moved to the US, communication comes much more natural here and a little bit of almost like posting and being proud of everything that we're doing. Whereas I think in Belgium and myself, I think we've been a little too humble maybe. But I think it is really important to communicate to the market what you're doing, why it is important, what progress you're making. So just realizing that a little sooner, I would say, getting help with that maybe even a little sooner, I think that would be my recommendation from that perspective. If I would be able to go back in time.
Felix van der Marle, thank you so much for taking the time to join us online and chat with us today. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thoughts on today's chat, Brendan?
I really enjoyed that. A couple of things really stuck out for me from what Felix said. What he said at the end about starting with your communications journey very early on and putting a real focus on it early on, and the fact that that will pay dividends was, I think, a valuable lesson that he shared for himself, which I think other companies would benefit from. And then I think something that he said, which hasn't been said quite as much by other people, is the importance of surrounding yourself with kind of experts, with great people that can help you with your communications journey and kind of share their advice if it's not something you're a natural at, which is understandable because you can't be brilliant at everything. So I thought those two points really stood out for me.
Good stuff. Well, that's actually it for this latest episode in the series with Taito. If you want to find out more about Calibra, then their website is simply calibra.com. We'd love to hear your comments on today's chat, and you can share them on our Facebook page, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter feeds, or in the comments on the YouTube version of this podcast. Those are all linked from the top of our website at csuitepodcast.com, where you'll also find all our previous shows and supporting show notes, plus links to where you can subscribe for automatic downloads of each episode via the likes of Spotify and Apple. And if you've liked what you heard, please do give us a positive rating and review. We're, of course, available on all podcast apps. Just search for the C-Suite Podcast and hit subscribe. And also, please do subscribe to the Without Borders podcast from our partners at Taito. All the details for that are on their website. And so just head to Taito PR and click on the podcast link in the top nav bar. If you are a unicorn leader yourself and you'd like to be part of this series, then please do get in touch via the contact form on the website at csuitepodcast.com. Plus, of course, anyone can get in touch too with any feedback you may have. And finally, you can also reach me via Twitter using @RussGoldsmith, or you can find me on LinkedIn. But for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.